Congressman, welcome to Effective Radio, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, Bill and Morgan, first of all, thank you for having me on, and I just want to associate myself with the remarks that you've made at the outset of your program, and I couldn't agree more with what you've said. I would also tell the listeners out there that I'm still optimistic. I'm optimistic about our future. Look, we clearly need to clean up Albany. There's no question on that. And what we really need is leadership by example. You know, we've seen this. You've pointed out the fact that Cuomo, he'll point to the legislature. He'll say, hey, we need you to do this. I mean, look, my experience being an infantry leader, no successful infantry leader, got a mission done by telling his men, go take a hill. An infantry leader gets out front. An infantry leader gets out front and says, we're going to the hill. Follow me. I mean, and this is really what's been missing. You say you want more transparency, more disclosure. The governor needs to go first. I mean, this is why, you know, fundamentally, just from a different background, whether it be under fire or other things in terms of tough decisions in combat, the commander, he or she really needs to go first. That's why, I believe in us as a people. I want to recur back to that optimistic point. I believe that we can be self-governing. Nobody gave us a chance in the 18th century when we came forward with a form of government to be self-governing. This was the era of divine right of kings and queens and aristocracies. They gave us no chance that this would work. We have not only shown the world that this can work. We flourished. We went on to be the greatest country in the history of mankind. And even though we have warts and challenges today, we can fix what's wrong with America by all the good that's out there. And, you know, what I think we need in Albany, when you talk about cleaning up, I think we need term limits. And this really goes back to the founders. You know, this was the original concept. It was actually in the Articles of Confederation. We did drop it when we went to the Constitution, but it's not because our founders gave up on term limits. It was because they made a conscious decision to make a very tight Constitution. And if you think about it, even our Bill of Rights wasn't in the original draft. That came as the first 10 amendments. Our first president felt so strongly about term limits that he self-imposed them. And I think the reason why this is important is this notion of being a self-governing people. We were never meant to have a permanent political class. And I think what we need in Albany is a governor who will self-impose the term limits, but then more than that, ask the legislature to send it to him or her so that they can codify that, they can put it in statute, and then that's a position of moral strength. I talked about leading, going first. Then you turn to the legislature and say, look, I've went first. I have term limited myself. I put it in law. Now I'm asking you to walk with me. Yep. And look, I think a governor has to be reasonable in terms of how long that will be, because the legislature is initially going to push back. But I think if 20 million New Yorkers get behind that concept, I don't think the legislature can stop that. And I think that's the first thing that needs to be done. Then there's also work that needs to be done in terms of disclosure. We have to clean up the process there. You know, this three men in a room, there's so much wrong with that. You know, in the Congress, for all of our challenges, we have regular order that we constantly beat the leadership on. We want to have regular order. That empowers each and every legislator, because that really restores the faith in the self-governance. And then let me also say this. We've got problems with the way we fund campaigns. Morgan had mentioned that as well. There's so much that can be said on that. And then finally, independent redistricting. We have this notion that we choose our representatives. It's actually an illusion. Too often, our representatives choose our voters every 10 years through this reapportionment, through this redistricting process. So we need a very strong agenda for reform that revitalizes our democracy and restores faith in our ability to be self-governing.
Well, I'd hate to run against you, Congressman, and I, as a Democrat, will march along with you as we try to reform Albany. But let me drill down now from the macro that we all agree upon to some specifics. Recently, Congress passed a bipartisan Every Student Succeed Act, which overhauls Every Child Left Behind. And it's a major change in education, especially in New York and what Cuomo was doing. Now, this is a favorite topic of mine. There is agreement now on what is not working in our educational system. There is no agreement on what will work vis-a-vis Common Core, and in particular to our outdated approach to standardized testing. Recently on our show, Michael Melgrew, the president of the UFT, completely agreed with me that the new approach to testing should be, one, diagnostic, and more importantly, the results should be given to our teachers on a timely basis. They should know what each student's strengths and weaknesses are, and therefore be able to individualize instruction better. A totally different approach to what testing is about. So my question to you is, one, do you agree with Melgrew and myself on what the new standard of testing is? And then broadly, do you have any other ideas on how, if you were elected, you could improve education in New York?
Well, I do agree. And by the way, that's based on experience. Not only 29 years in the military, I started as a private E-1, the lowest rank you can be in the military, in the National Guard. I rose to colonel, and I had brigade command, 4,500 paratroopers. But, you know, the approach that we use for excellence, because that's one thing I think we all agree upon, is we want more excellence in education in our schools. The approach that we use in the United States military heavily focused on leader development, on professional development. You know, and I'm talking about focused time. And we mentored two levels below. So as a brigade commander, my sergeant major and I, we focused on our company commanders. In a brigade, there's the 31 companies. These are mid-level managers, leaders, with about 150 paratroopers each in every company. And so that company commander and a first sergeant, when I mean focused time, you have the experience. By that point, I'd served about 23, 24 years. My sergeant major actually had more time than that. And we spent time, we gave a block of instruction. We then went through a practical exercise. So they had a chance to, like say, as an airborne unit, we were going to do a simulation of an airfield seizure, a parachute assault led by seizing an airfield. They would get a block of instruction followed by an opportunity to develop a plan based in part by that block of instruction, but also their own experience and intuition and analysis. And then we would enter that into a simulator, and they would actually have to fight that plan. And at the end of that, the mentors, myself and my sergeant major, would give individualized feedback to the company commanders and the first sergeants on how well they did. And then they turned around and they had an opportunity to do it again. And what I would share with you is that focus on mentorship significantly enhanced the effectiveness of our unit, and it increased the competence and confidence in our leaders. And I find it tragically ironic that at a time that Cuomo was demonizing our teachers and really following the federal government in terms of over-centralizing and trying to homogenize graduates based on unfunded mandates and onerous high-stakes testing, at a time that he was moving down the wrong path, at the same time he was cutting the budget for professional development. Yep. So he just couldn't be more wrong. So I wanted to say that based on my experience, I do believe that you talked about diagnostic, that's essentially what the analysis I just gave you as far as that.
No, absolutely.
Exercise.
And guess what? We're in agreement with the UFT and me and you. That shows there's a growing consensus. Morgan?
Well, Congressman, one area where you've been out of step with a lot of leaders in your party is on climate change. Whereas there are a lot of climate change deniers among Republicans, you introduced a resolution in the House acknowledging that humans had a role in climate change and calling on Congress to mitigate its effects. Unfortunately, in my opinion, the resolution only has 11 co-sponsors, though I should note that three of them are Republican members from New York, Representatives Elise Stefanik, Tom Reed, and Richard Hanna. Two questions, Congressman. First, why is it that you think the Republican Party is so averse to acknowledging climate change? And second, what is your take on the global agreement on climate change signed in Paris earlier this month?
Well, thanks, Morgan. A couple things. First of all, I really don't understand how we got off the tracks here, because, look, to me, if conservation isn't conservative, then words have no meaning at all. You know, as somebody who cares deeply about, you know, being smart with the resources we have, the same inclination of why I'm trying to get us back to a balanced budget so that future generations get the same choices and freedoms that we've had, that same inclination is why I want to protect the Earth. I want to make sure that we're good stewards of resources, man-made and natural. So I just want to state that very clearly. To me, it's very internally consistent to conserve resources. And when you talk about the climate, look, it has been the case since time out of memory that our climate has changed. I mean, after all, we had an ice age. You know, what's different now is man is having an impact. What I tell folks is, look, would you go into your garage, your closed garage, would you turn on your car and just stand there, you know, for 12, 14 hours? Well, of course you wouldn't do that. I mean, we know that that would be harmful to you. So, look, there's certainly more at play when you talk about doing this in the open air. I'm certainly aware of that and all the processes as far as regeneration. But my point to you is this. We know that these emissions are having an impact. I also have a sense of humility as to how much. People say, well, you say humans are having an impact. How much? I mean, candidly, I don't know. We need more research to know the extent, but I will tell you humans have contributed to this changing climate. I'm in Columbia County. I'm calling you this morning from Kinderhook. In my home county, we've had four new invasive species that have visited us over the last decade, decade and a half. Look, for a county that relies so heavily on agriculture, farming is really a major driver of our local economy here, and to be dealing with these new invasive species, I mean, this is really hitting us right at the center of how we make money up here, that along with tourism, which is a major issue. So, look, to me, what I'm trying to carve out a space for is a Republican pro-environment space. Now, that does mean at times we're going to agree with Democrats and independents, but sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're going to have our own Republican pro-environment approach. And I will tell you that here is what the agenda I propose. I propose three things that I think are really helpful, some of which Democrats and independents agree with. The first of which is research, development, and prototyping to perfect clean energy. And look, this is a country that has shown time and again that we can do hard things. We put a man on the moon, for God's sakes, and we won the Cold War. We faced that challenge against the Soviet communist threat in part because of research, development, and prototyping that allowed us to overcome with superior technology. And what do we also get as a positive byproduct? We got the supercomputer, and we got the internet. We got the information age. And what I'm sharing with you is that using a similar approach of research, development, and prototyping, we can perfect these clean energy sources, and we can pass anyone in the world. I know when I bring up this topic, they say, well, you know, the Germans and those in Asia, they're doing better than us. But there's no reason why we can't drive down the total cost for these sources, and it'll democratize energy. Imagine a working class family that is able to, you know, if they have the American dream, they're a working class family, but they own a home, and they're able to, when they re-shingle every 25 years or so, and put receptacles that are accessible to them in terms of price range, and then they can drive down their cost for energy. This is, we know that working class folks, I grew up in one of those families, they spend 96% of their take-home pay, and when they get a tax cut or a pay increase or a cut in their overhead, they generally spend 96% of that. So you're talking about something that is not only good for the environment, it drives the local economy. Now you have people that are doing renovations on their home, going out to eat, maybe the theater. The point is spending their money locally. They're not putting it into their furnace. And quite frankly, keeping energy prices low, it's not going into gas tanks. It's velocity. So, you know, I would tell you that's the first thing, research, development, and prototyping. The second thing is conservation. I'm very strong on these conservation programs in our farm bill and in the land and water conservation. And then the third is emissions. And this gets me to your point, Morgan, you asked about Paris. Look, I'm still reviewing the details of that, but let me just make some general comments. Since I'm not prepared to make specific ones, I will tell you this. There are some things that I think are encouraging in what I've been hearing about these discussions internationally. The first is this, is that the goal that we are setting, 26% reduction in emissions based on a 2005 benchmark by the year 2025, is very reachable. I mean, we're already today, in the last days of 2015, we are already over halfway there. So, you know, to the naysayers out there, we're already on track to meet this, even without an onerous cap and trade system, which I oppose, by the way. I don't think we need bad tax policy as a means to get us to where we need to go. So that's the first thing, is that what is in there? And keep in mind, to those that may be skeptical, this is a non-binding agreement which, you know, for those on the right, that should give you some reason to be looking at this in greater detail, because what you're hearing is our goal is reasonable, number one. Number two is, you know, any investment we make in this is non-binding, but can very well be in our interest. Why? Because one of the things you often hear on the right is, well, you know, we could make reductions, but what about China? What about India? What about Russia? Well, this is what's encouraging about these discussions, is these nations have come to the table and have said that they're going to make commitments that are going to be, they're going to have transparency in terms of reviewing how well they're doing.
Congressman, I hate to interrupt you, but since we only have a few minutes left, I want to see if I can find something that we don't agree upon. Specifically, if we have a constitutional convention vote, which we will have in 2017, do you favor it or not?
I do. And look, I understand both sides of this argument, but here's the thing. We led off this conversation talking about a government of the people, by the people, for the people, a self-governing people. We clearly need reform in this state. There is no doubt.
All right, we're short on time, so let me go to the next one. Many of us believe it's time for our legislature to be like Congress, be full-time with limited outside income. Do you agree or not agree?
Well, I'm not ready to sign up for pay raises for legislators right now.
Okay, well, there we clearly disagree. Next, and I'm going to be brief on this, but I want you to think about it. The property taxes in your county could be cut by 47% in Ulster, could be cut by 100% in Otsego because of the Medicaid allocation in Albany. We're the only state that does it. Lieutenant Governor Ravitch has also suggested that New York should get more than 50% reimbursement, and that would pay for the reduction. Are you for the state taking over 100% of the local Medicaid charges and drastically lowering the county property taxes in your counties and throughout New York?
I definitely think we need to go beyond where we are today. We have, in the last few years, frozen the increases. We need to begin the process of rolling back the onerous impact of the program on our counties.
Well,
so,
I
need to be realistic, though. I don't think that can happen totally overnight, but I do think we need to be marching towards freeing up that burden that's currently on the county as much as we possibly can take it.
All right. As we wrap up, let me just state, one, it's only $2.2 billion outside of New York City. It could be phased out in 3 years easily in a $150 million budget, and the Republican Party has resisted this for some bizarre reason. Anyway, let me wrap up. You clearly, and I look forward to meeting you and working with you to change Albany, but you seem a lot different than Donald Trump. If he's elected, are you going to support him? Nominated?
Well, look, I mean, he is he's running for president of the United States under this banner from the party that I'm in. I have told people before I'm prayerful that you will see some kind of evolution in this guy. Look, I understand what is the phenomenon behind this.
Right,
in
but
fact,
you're hesitating, right? You're not
willing.
Well,
here's why. I mean, I need to give you a serious answer. I mean, here's the issue. I mean, I have concerns about giving that guy an army. As somebody who served for 29 years, I mean, I have concerns given what I've heard to date about his temperament and the judgment he has. Look, I also understand what's driving this. I saw this coming. I mean, even with the approach that I take in Congress, which is to bring people together to get things done, many people describe that as reasonable. I couldn't vote for John Boehner's reelect. You know, we had this conversation. I'm one of the very few that didn't vote for him that actually spoke to him about it. And we actually had a very civil conversation, but I thought it was time for him to retire, because what was happening is this was giving rise to so much alienation in the Republican Party. We have to face those facts straight on with straight talk. I hope I've given you that straight talk today.
I think, one, we're going to continue this discussion. I think it's fascinating. And for me, as a Democrat, I strongly support us having the strongest national Republican Party, and I look forward to us working together. So it's not only been a pleasure to have you on, I think we found that you're going to have to come on again, and I hope you're open to that. And I thank
you
for taking this time to talk with Effective Radio about how we can make our state great again. Thank you, Congressman
Bill and Morgan, thank you for what you do, and God bless all the listeners out there, too.